Good morning. So glad to see you here this morning. I come to you this morning from winter camp, and it was an amazing weekend. And if they tell you any different, well, I was there. But no, it was a great time spent with the young people, and it was especially fun for me because this was Hagen's first winter camp. As finally being a part of the youth group and watching him to start to head into that role, it was neat to not be the one in charge and kind of watch from afar and watch him interact with different people, to watch him engage in the lessons, and it was definitely a pleasure. This morning I want to talk to you about something very specifically. I want to talk to you about being pliable versus being rigid or brittle. What does it mean to be pliable? And I tried to think of some examples in my mind of things that are pliable. And I thought about maybe leather and how it can be very pliable. But that doesn't really apply to us. I don't know many people that work with leather. There are some. But I did think of something that applies to every one of us. And it's cookies. I don't care who you are. You like cookies. Even if you're gluten-free, you still like them. Yeah, thank you. But when you have that cookie dough, it's so moldable, shapeable, pliable. It can be put into any shape that you want. But then once you put it in the oven, you take it out, it no longer is very pliable. Or maybe it is just for a few minutes. But then very quickly, it becomes quite brittle. You can break that cookie. And I want us to kind of keep that image in our head as we kind of go through our talk this morning. And if you've read the bulletin article, then you already know where I'm going with this. And the title of today's lesson is, He Doesn't Throw Away the Clay. I thought of 1,000 different titles. We're going to be talking about Jeremiah in Jeremiah chapter 18. And if you want to head over there, you can. And while you're heading over there, I want to tell you a quick story. There's a little place up in Arkansas called Eureka Springs. And it's in the very top left-hand, you've been there? My man. A little top left-hand corner of Arkansas. It's a little bitty nothing town that you wouldn't even know was there, except they have one thing that they're known for, and it's the passion play. They have this giant football field size area and stadium seating, and you can go and you can watch the last days of Christ's life reenacted through actors. They go out there and they redo this thing, and it goes all the way from his triumphal entry all the way up into his ascension at the end. And it's really amazing and fun to watch, and also kind of put some names and faces, or names, some faces, two names, if you will, of seeing it live and in action right there before you. But before you go and watch the show, they have these kind of mini shows that you can do. They've got their own little mini Bible land. I don't know if you went to the one in Orlando or not. It's very nice. They have their own little mini Bible land as well that you can just walk around and you can interact with some of the people. There's the woman at the well. And over here, you've got the fishermen. They're getting ready to go out on their catch. And then you can also go and take a tour of the tabernacle. And it's really neat. There's a priest there and he takes you on the tour. But right before the show, the man who will play Jesus in the big play is there. And he does like kind of a, I guess, a pre-show, a little pre-game warm-up, if you will. And you can go in and you can watch him sit down at the potter's wheel. And they've tried to make it as authentic as possible. And they've got this potter's wheel, and it's a double wheel. I don't know if you've ever seen one or not. But he uses his foot to kick that bottom wheel, which is attached to the top wheel, which makes the whole thing spin. And if you really take a good look at him, you can tell his right leg is significantly bigger than his left leg because of how much and how often and how long he's been kicking that wheel. And I have to imagine that's exactly what they would have looked like in those days. In those olden days, those men who would sit down at the potter's wheel would probably have a bigger leg on one side than the other from kicking that wheel. It was amazing to watch him as he took that clay that you and I know so well because we live in Florida. And I don't want my house built on clay, but there's so much of it. It's so common. It's everywhere in Florida. It's not just in Florida, but it's around the world. It's so common that you can buy it by the ton or at least buy it by the yard. It's not really something that you think too much of. It's more in the way. It's more of a nuisance. It's a nothing. More than it's a something. That is until You take that nothing and you put it in the hands of the potter. And that's where we find ourselves in Jeremiah. In the 18th chapter, and I encourage you to read along to yourself as I read along out loud. Chapter 18, starting in verse 1, it says this. This is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Go down to the potter's house, and there you will be given a message. Let's stop there, because this is worth mentioning. If you've read Jeremiah, and I know that you have, you've seen how often Jeremiah is sent on mission. You've seen how often that he is sent to give a message to a people. Go down to the city gate and tell them there. Go into this city. Go to such and such a people. Go to my Israelite kingdom. Tell them this message. He is God's messenger. He is God's servant. He is one who gives the sermon, if you will. And that's why this is so neat, to me at least, because he's not going down to the potter's house to tell the potter something. He's going down to the potter's house to receive a message. Let's pick back up right there. Verse 3, so I went down to the potter's house and I saw him working at the wheel. But the pot he was shaping was from clay, was marred in his hands. So the potter formed it into another pot, shaping it as he sees best and fit. Then the word of the Lord came to me. He said, can I not do to you, Israel, as this potter does, declares the Lord, like clay in his hand of the potter, so are you in my hand, Israel. He was teaching Jeremiah this lesson, and I can't help but think Jeremiah saw the same three things when he looked in the potter's window or opened the potter's door, when he went down to the potter's house, that I saw when I gazed in at this actor Jesus sitting at the same potter's wheel. I imagine he saw three things. He saw the potter. Pretty unmistakable. That's what he came down to see. He saw the wheel, which we've also discussed, but he also saw that clay that was in the potter's hands. This formless, shapeless clay, this lump that he stuck down on the wheel, he would have slapped it down. It would have been just a little bit wet, and then he would have started kicking that wheel, and it would start to spin, and he would take his hands, and he would get them wet, and he would place them on that lump of clay. And as he would put his hands on there, even from my vantage point, which was pretty far back, I could see his hands moving with the clay because it wasn't smooth. It was a lump. And we can think about it, and God was comparing his people, Israel, us, if you will, to that same lump of clay, that when he puts his hands on us, we're lumpy. We're not smooth. We've got some edges we need to be worked out. And if you were to take that lump of clay and just look at it, it's not much to look at. It's ugly. It's gray. There's not much you can do with it. If he were to say, and I've made this for you, here's a lump of clay. There's not much you could do with it. Maybe a paperweight, but it's just going to be in the way, and you'd probably just toss it outside with the rest of the clay that's probably back there in your yard somewhere. It's not really useful. But when God puts his hands, when Jesus puts his hands, when the maker of this universe puts his hands on that clay, something very special happens. Something very different happens. But I can imagine if you're like me, you're that lump of clay, maybe you don't feel good enough. Maybe you don't feel like you're worth enough. Maybe there's things in your life, there's these lumps that are making the potter's hands move back and forth that you know aren't right. And we're ashamed of those things. We don't want anybody to know about them. But the potter says, that's what I'm here for, is to help smooth out those lumps in this piece of clay. I want to make something better out of you. I just don't want to make this smooth object. I'm ready to make something beautiful out of your life. And you go, but no, there's nothing beautiful in my life. You don't know. If you knew, if you really knew, if you could open up my closet and look at the skeletons in there, you wouldn't want to talk to me. You wouldn't want to be with me anymore. You wouldn't want to hang out, and you wouldn't want me around you anymore. And God says, but I already know all that. He puts his hands on that clay, and it starts to change. It starts to be molded in his hands. And we're doing the same thing with our lives. When he puts us on that wheel and it starts to spin, he controls how fast or how slow it goes. He controls the amount of pressure that he puts on that clay. And he's the one who shapes and molds and forms that clay, which is us. In Isaiah chapter 45 and verse 9, we see the first real interaction here with Isaiah in talking about the clay. And Isaiah says, or it's, the word says to Isaiah, does the clay say to the maker? Does the clay say anything to the maker? And when you look at it, it's really funny. It's not like hilarious, like you want to slap your knee, but it's really funny to think about this clay that's been slapped on this wheel, looking back at the master and going, I don't really want to look like that. I saw a vase over there. Make me like that one. But the clay does nothing but sit there and be molded by the master, the creator, whose hands it's in. We don't have a say. The clay doesn't have a say in what it wants to be, what it wants to look like. There were all kinds of pots and pottery there behind this actor Jesus. Because every single time he does a show, he makes a pot, a vase, a vessel. And you can buy the one that he makes right there. It's more expensive because you watched him make it. Or you can just buy one of the ones that didn't get bought that are behind him. And there's a vast array. And they're quite beautiful. But you can buy any one that you want. And they're all different. There's not two that are the same. There are two that are alike, but there's not two that are the same. And we can look at our lives and we can say the exact same thing. There's not two of us that are the same. He doesn't make cookie cutter carbon copies of us. He makes each one different because we all have a purpose. We all have a direction. We all have skills and things that we can do and ways that he made us and opportunities that are put before us and in front of us. There's people that you know that I'll never meet. There's opportunities that you'll have that I'll never encounter. There's doors that you can go and walk into and talk to people. And if I were to knock on those same doors, I would be rejected. But you already have an open door into their lives. We all have different abilities, different skills, different times and places where we are meant to be, things that we can do. In Romans chapter 9, verses 20 and 21, we see the same kind of action and reaction here as Luke is discussing here. Chapter 9, verse 20 starts like this. It says, but who are you, a human being, to talk back to God? Shall what is formed say to the one who formed it, why did you make me like this? Does not the potter have the right to make out of the same lump of clay some pottery for special purpose and some for common use? I don't want to be a common use pot. I don't want to be just another. But what if that's what God needs me to be? Not all of us can be fill in the blank. He needs each of us to fill the role that he's put us into. He doesn't need a congregation full of reeds. He's already got one. He's really not that great. So we don't need a whole lot more. He needs each one of us to fill the role that he's given us. But we can't do that unless we are willing to, ready, here it is, yield to his touch. Because as that lump of clay is moving back and forth in his hands, it's slowly becoming less of a movement. And slowly but surely, it's becoming so smooth that his hands just stay on top of that lump and there's no movement whatsoever. Because the clay was willing to yield itself to the potter's touch. And we have to do the same thing in our life. We have to be willing to yield to the potter's touch. And you know what? Yielding isn't fun. Yielding isn't easy. Yielding sometimes doesn't feel good. There's tests that we are put to by the Lord in our everyday life. I really truly believe that. There's tests that come up to us. And I like to say to Amanda, you know what, this is a test that we're going through right now. And you know what, I'd like to pass it the first time because God's a lot like teachers. And if we don't pass it the first time, he'll probably give us that test again. And I don't want to take the test again. I didn't want to take it again in school and I sure don't want to take it again in life. So let's get this one right the first time. And sometimes I don't. But when you can realize this is a hardship we're going through. This is a test that we've got to pass, and he's making us better. This doesn't feel good. I don't want to do this. Why are you putting your fingers into me like that? The clay doesn't get to ask that question. But at the end, we can see why. And that may be what you're going through right now. Maybe there's a hardship in your life. There's something going on in your life right now, and you don't understand why. And if you could just talk to God and he could talk back and you could say, why are you doing this? Why are you allowing this to happen? Why won't you change things? But we don't get to ask that question. Or we could ask it all we want, but we don't get the answer At least not right away. Do you ever notice when you're in the middle of it, you can't really see it? You've got to just keep walking and keep going. And eventually you stop and you look back and you go, oh, I get it. I now see. And that's exactly what happens to this clay. Someday it becomes that vessel and it can see, oh, that's why I was shaped that way. That's why there was pressure applied here. Because in order to make me the way you wanted me, you had to apply that pressure. It didn't feel good. I didn't like going through it, but I survived it. Now that I've survived it, I understand. But we can't understand when we're going through it, can we? I don't know why this is happening. Why does it keep happening over and over and over? Why can't I get through this? When will we ever make ends meet? When will I ever get a job that I actually enjoy and I don't dread going to every single day? When will I ever get these children raised? Whatever it is for your life. Yeah. Because we all have something different. We all have pressure being applied to us in different ways. And the faster we yield to that pressure, the faster we let the potter do his work, the faster it will be over. But the longer we stay brittle, the longer we keep pushing against him, the longer it will take him to teach us those lessons. And that's hard. It's so easy to stand up here and do, but it's so hard when you have to pick and choose what bills you're going to pay this month. It's so hard when you want so badly just to make your child do this thing because they're not even a child anymore. They're a grown adult and you can't make them do anything, but you keep trying. It's so hard sometimes. But truth isn't revealed on a sunny day. Anybody can be a God follower when the sun is shining and it's beautiful outside. Truth is revealed when we're put under that pressure. Truth is revealed when the dark clouds come in and the thunder starts to roll and it feels a little bit scary. I don't know if I'm going to survive it, but when I do, I can look back and I can see it was God the entire time. I can look back and I can see it was his hands that were on me. It was his hands that were shaping and molding me. And when it got hard, it was because I was pushing against him. God doesn't throw away the spoiled clay. Did you catch that in the beginning of chapter 18? If you didn't, I want to go back there with you. Back in Jeremiah, the 18th chapter. I didn't catch it either the first time. It was when I read it the second time that I caught it. Chapter 18, verse 1. This is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Go down to the potter's house, and there I will give you a message. Verse 3. So I went down to the potter's house, and I saw him working at the wheel, but the pot he was shaping from clay was marred. Another version says spoiled in his hands. So the potter picked it up and threw it in the trash. No. It was marred in his hands. So the potter formed it into another pot, shaping it as he saw fit. He didn't throw the clay away. When the clay didn't obey, when he was forming it, he wanted it to be a tall spire. And when he did, it started to wobble and shake and it just fell apart and then it cracked at the base. And so he just threw it away. No, he just took it and he started over. And he formed it the way he wanted to form it. Our own choices help to shape our vessel. God has a plan in mind of how he wants this to be. But unfortunately for the potter, he's given us free will. And we get to make choices. And I get to help adjust what I will become. And through my own choices, sometimes I make my life a lot harder. And I can change things. But hopefully I stay yielding. Hopefully I stay pliable where he can keep molding me. And just because I've made a mistake doesn't mean that I can't be reformed. Just because I've fallen off doesn't mean I can't be put back. Just because it didn't work out doesn't mean God can't fix it. It's when I become brittle. It's when I don't yield to him that we start to have problems. Because we see it in Adam and Eve in the garden. They had a plan. The plan was to live in the garden forever, for them to be there and to never die, to never have sickness, never have pain. It was kind of like a mini heaven, if you will. But they chose to sin. And through that sin, everything changed. And they can never go back to the garden. And they found that out when they went back to the garden and there was this flaming sword going in every direction and they couldn't enter the garden again. And it gave them pain. I'm sure it did. I want to go back in there. And God says, you can't. You can't ever go back. And we know that's the truth because when I say these words, I can't get them back. I can't unsay them. I can't push rewind. I can't push delete. I can't make you forget what I just said. And when I do this action, it's the same thing. I can't take it back. I can apologize all day long. But the world has now been changed. You've now been changed. I've now been changed because of my words, because of my actions, because of who I am, because of what I've done. And I can't take it back, but I can yield to God because he can fix things. He can still make something out of this lump of clay that decided to disobey him. He just starts over if I let him. The same thing happened to Moses. Moses had the king's life. He was a son of the king, if you will. I use the quotation marks, a son of the king. He lived in the palace. He had the education that we would all love to have. He had luxury and pleasure, and he had things given to him just by asking for them. Can you imagine that? Say, hey, I would like a glass of tea. And then someone would bring it to you. That sounds amazing. That's the life that he had. And then he made a decision that would change the rest of his life. He killed an Egyptian and then went on the run and lived in the wilderness for 40 years. You ever think he thought about, if I had just not done that? He probably never thought of that. But he couldn't take it back, could he? He couldn't make it unhappen. But he could still be God's man. God, the God that we serve, is a God of second chances, third chances, 157th chances, and I'm so glad because I need every one of them. And God still said, I've got a use for you. He didn't say, oh, you did this. I no longer can use you. You can go and sit over there on the bench because the starters are going to play now. He says, no. God uses broken people. God uses messed up people. God uses those who make mistakes. And he says, I've still got use for you, Moses. Not just a little use. I've got a big one, but you're going to have to yield to what I want you to do. And he made excuses. We can see the excuses. And it starts in Exodus chapter 3. And he says, what if they don't believe that you sent me? Well, I can't do this because I don't speak well. You know what, God? I just don't want to go. And that's when God got angry. But God still had a use for him. And we know the end of the story. David stole a man's wife and killed him. But God said, I've still got use for you if you'll stay pliable. Peter denied him. And Judas betrayed him. One stayed pliable. One became brittle. Do you think Jesus wouldn't have forgiven Judas? It's hard to think about that, isn't it? Maybe you've never thought about it. The one who betrayed him. It's bad that Peter denied him. Yes. I don't want to take anything away from that. But Judas betrayed him, handed him over. Do you think Jesus wouldn't have forgiven him too? And we know he would have. But Judas wasn't willing to yield himself. What kind of clay are we? In Romans chapter 9, we started that verse, and I stopped early on purpose because it serves two purposes. In Romans chapter 9, we started up in verse 20. We'll start there, and we'll keep going this time. Romans chapter 9, starting in verse 20. But you who are a human being, can you talk back to God? Shall what is formed say to the one who formed it, why did you make me like this? Does not the potter have the right to make out of the same lump of clay some pottery for special purpose and other for common use? Verse 22. What if God, although choosing to show his wrath and make his power known before, bore with great patience the objects of his wrath, prepared for destruction? What if he did this to make the riches of his glory known to the objects of his mercy, whom he prepared in advance for glory? What if God did do that? What if God formed us knowing that we would mess up, knowing that we would mar his creation, and having a backup plan, if you will, being ready for that? You think God didn't know that I was going to make a mistake? Many mistakes. caught him way off guard. Reed, I didn't see that one coming. That's not it. There's another translation that I really like right here. And it says, I will call nobodies and make them somebodies. I will call the unloved and I will make them loved. Because there's none of us sitting here that are perfect. There's none of us that haven't made mistakes. There's none of us that haven't been that unyielding clay at some point in our life. But he says, I will take the nobodies and I'll make them somebodies. And I'll take the unloved and I'll make them loved. I will do this great thing. But I don't want us to get too wrapped up and lose sight of the fact that we have, yes, a very patient and loving God who wants no one to perish, but wants all to come to repentance. But there is a day coming. There is a day coming, and it's either our death or it's the judgment day. In Jeremiah chapter 18, we find Jeremiah going down to the house of the potter. But in Jeremiah chapter 19, things change just a little bit. Chapter 19, verse 1, this is what the Lord says. Go and buy a clay jar from a potter. So we've got him in chapter 18. I want you to go down to the house of the potter. I want you to see what he's doing there. I want you to learn this message. And then chapter 19 says, I want you to buy a pot now. And take along some of the elders of the people and the priest, and go out into the valley of Ben-Hanan and near the entrance of the gate. There, proclaim the words I tell you. So he's got this message he wants to proclaim to them. And that's not today's message. So we're going to skip over that. We're going to go right to verse 10. You ready? He says, then break the jar while those who go with you are watching. And say to them, this is what the Lord Almighty says. I will smash this nation and this city just as a potter's jar is smashed and cannot be repaired. We have an opportunity in this life to yield to the potter's hands, to become the vessel he wants us to be, to do great things, to be useful, to be an instrument for his service. Now, I may not be the exact instrument that I want to be. I'd rather do this. Maybe I don't have that skill set. Why can't I do that? I wasn't given those abilities, but I can do the thing that God's given me the ability to do. I can be the vessel that he has created, and I can do that to the best of my ability. Maybe I wanted to be this great thing, but I was made for common use. God loves them both, and he's thankful for them both. The potter was sitting there, and he opened it up for questions. The day that I was watching this actor Jesus make all these pots, and he opened it up to the crowd for questions. And one person asked him, they said, which one is your favorite pot or jar or vessel you've ever made? And of course, the obvious answer is, it's whichever one I'm working on right now. But he didn't say that. That's what I thought he'd say. That's the easy answer. I said, which one is your favorite? He says, oh, I've definitely got a favorite. And he held up this little vessel that was right there on his platform next to the wheel. And it's where he kept the water. It was ugly. I'm talking ugly as homemade soap. Just looked like a whole bunch of nothing. And he says, you know what this is? He says, this is the first one I ever made. And it has the water in it that forms the heart of every single vessel that I create. So a little bit of my very first creation is in every single creation that I make. And that really stuck with me. It really stuck with me because it's the same thing. I think about that being Jesus, and there's a little bit of Jesus inside of every single one of us. He started off with this, if you will, this perfect, and he made everyone from that. And then in doing that, we now have, again, choices, and we go astray, but he brings us back to that same table, and he keeps molding us, and he keeps putting pressure where we need pressure. He keeps forming us with his hands, up until the point when we no longer will take the training. We no longer will yield to the potter's touch. We no longer will do the things that he wants us to do. And at that point in time, he says, there's nothing left for you except to be broken, except to be shattered, except to be thrown on the ground. We have a patient and loving and kind Father, but his patience will only go for so long. In Matthew chapter 7, in verse 21, we see a very familiar passage, one that's quite scary. It's very scary, in fact, because this is the passage where we learn that not everyone will be in heaven. In chapter 7, in verse 21, is where I'd like to be. It says this: "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and drive out demons in your name and perform many miracles?' Then I will tell them plainly, 'I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers.'" There is coming that day, either the time of our death or the time of judgment, when all things will be brought into account, when he will say to us, "Well done, good and faithful servant. I made this vessel and you did your job." Or he will look at this vessel that he tried to work with but was unyielding. It was brittle and there's nothing left to do but to toss it into the fire. I can't use this. And that's a scary thought and it's a scary day. But keeping those things in mind and making sure we're all on the same playing field, I'm looking around today this morning and there's nobody dead in this auditorium. Praise the Lord. He is yet to come in the clouds with the great trumpet blast. So there is still time to yield to the potter's touch. There is still time to take the pressure that he's putting on you right now, and only you know how he's doing it, and to allow that to form you, allow that to build your character, allow him to make you into what he wants you to be. And it may not be the thing you want to be, but it's the thing he needs you to be. Will we be willing to let the potter have his way? Or do we want to keep driving our own bus and going down this road, and this is what I want to do? When will we let our selfishness subside and let the Father have his way? Maybe someone in this audience this morning that has a need. Maybe it's a broken life, home, marriage, job, children. Whatever it is that's on your heart, what's on your mind, that there's pressure that's being applied and you feel like it's too much, it's not. But you don't have to be alone. Maybe you've never taken on the Lord Christ as your Savior. There's no better place and time than right now to do that. We have this opportunity because there's breath in your lungs. There's time to make a change. There's time to submit to the will of the Father and not follow our own will. We have that opportunity every minute of every day. But we have waters that are ready and people that can pray with you here right now. So if you have a need, don't delay. Come while together we stand and sing.